This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Okay, Mac Angle, our old buddy Mac. Hey, what's up, dude? He's got a story up about how maybe hiring Urban Meyer or another big name is not such a reach for the Cowboys as we look at who are the candidates to be the next head coach. Has a story up and a quote from Stephen Jones. So we'll talk about that right here. We have some audio from the Star as well. Kellen Moore, Chris Richard talking about this matchup and what's important. We might get to that as well. Right here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Everybody good?
Why'd he say that, Gavin? Because I got my theory I'm kicking around.
Well, it was a quote from Bill Parcells, and he's got a story from Stephen Jones on it. Stephen says, when we sat with him and hired him, which a lot of people didn't think Jerry would hire a coach like that, that's another thing that's misleading. For most people, it's a matter of timing. I don't think we've ever had anyone that we could get our hands on didn't want to coach the Cowboys. Including Bill. He said, how could you not want to coach the Cowboys? It's the big show. It's America's team. If you get it done, it's bigger than life. So the topic would be, have we overplayed or souped up too much the idea that the Cowboys' challenges will prevent those big-name head coaches from even taking it? Are they willing to take it knowing, well, you know, if it's too much of a pain in my butt, I'll leave in a couple of years. Because so, that's kind of what Stephen Jones believes, it sounds like.
Are you saying that when there were coaching searches throughout Jerry Jones's career, he thought everybody will take this job and the best person in the world for this is Chan Gailey?
Well,
the best person in the
Tampa,
world for this
Garrett.
So the people he's hired, everybody wanted this job. That were available, and the best people that he interviewed were the people that he's hired to be the head coach over these 25 years?
Let me go back over this with a fine-tooth comb, because it might be a little bit of trickeration used by Stephen with the English language.
Tricknology!
Yeah, maybe he did that. For most people, it's a matter of timing. I don't think we've ever had anyone that we could get our hands on that didn't want to coach. So he is saying everybody we've talked to would have been willing to take it, and it's a matter of timing. But were there a couple of people out there that were like, oh, the timing's just not right because they knew it.
So every year, yeah. Every coach wants to be the Dallas Cowboys coach. Now, if they're under contract, they can't.
The ones they reached out to.
Yes. They've never talked to one that's like, nope, not going to do it.
That's how you couch it.
Too much Jerry.
Out of everyone they've reached out to, they've been interested.
Yeah. Which is
who'd you reach out to?
Yeah. And were there people that we would all say there's no way that guy's going to take the job because of those dynamics?
I think this goes one of two ways. The Cowboys' next head coach, if it's the big name, which I don't think it's impossible that it's one of the big names. I don't think it's impossible that, and throw out the highest, furthest reaching names you can find. I know Brada said, I start with Belichick and work my way down. If you're the Cowboys, that's what you do. I believe that. And if it's one of the best coaches, when they walk in, part of that negotiation is going to be, you stay out of my business. And if it's one of the best coaches, I think Jerry will be open to it for this reason.
Going in, yeah.
Right, going in. And so maybe it doesn't last long. But I do think they can land a great coach because between Jimmy and Parcells was 14 years. It's now been 16 years since Parcells. So it's been over 15 years again since you had somebody who might tell you to get out of their office once in a while, right? I would imagine Jerry is at that frustrated, angry, desperation point so that they will be interested in the best coaches they can find, and those coaches will be able to negotiate. Leave me alone. Let me do my job. Or they will be hiring from guys that won't get offers anywhere else. And they'll go in and they'll say, yes, sir. So it's going to be one of the two.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get a great coach who at least for a small amount of time will be able to do things his way. Or you'll get a guy that just wants an NFL head coaching job and will say, yes, sir.
Yeah, and I want to see them take a shot at it with a big ego guy, you know? I'd kind of like the fireworks. Plus, you know, Parcells whipped this team together really, really quick. If you see any kind of similarities, like, wow, we just need a guy to maximize the talent instead of try to, you know, carry on his antiquated vision of, you know, what he thinks football should be. But I do think it's a really interesting point that, you know, even if the guy thinks, man, this might be crappy, I don't know, should I do it, guys? He's calling up his buddies. in the end, you wake up from sleeping on it. You're like, I can't turn down a chance to do this. Even if it's a complete train wreck, I can manage BS. You know, most guys are married and they're like, wow, this is a communication disaster. And I spend my entire off season laying next to this woman, right? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. That's super stressful trying to negotiate a relationship for 20, 30, or 40 years.
I can handle that, Jerry. I can
do
this.
We live in a garage for fun. We don't want to be there.
Right?
Come on.
Yeah, so I wonder, you know, just how possible it is and if it's overstated. I think making it a long-term success and happy, yes. And maybe almost immediately, right? How long does it take where Jerry Jones agrees to it? Yeah, well, you know.
2 or 3 years.
At most.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see it being 2 or 3 months. Things happen quickly. Expectations change. Dan Marino once was going to join the Miami Dolphins front office for about 30 hours.
You know? Did he report? Did he get to the office?
I think he was there. Yeah,
he did a couple of. He walked in and was like, this isn't working out for me.
Did a couple of days and was like, holy cow, man, this is a really tough one.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it'll be. I don't know. I'm thinking it'll be a real disappointment if it's not a very big name or a very exciting name. Because it doesn't have to be a proven NFL guy. It could be a proven college guy. If we think we know what they bring to the NFL level, that'd be good. That'd be great. But if it's a coordinator off of a team where it's like, well, hold on. He would have taken the New York Jets job.
Yeah.
That'll be really disappointing. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but that would be really disappointing.
ESPN Dallas, Todd Archer, he had a really interesting, the most comprehensive piece up that I've seen so far of all the candidates. Sean Payton, Mike Zimmer, Ron Rivera, Mike McCarthy, Josh McDaniels. There's a second chance guy right there. Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator. Greg Roman, the Ravens offensive coordinator. New Orleans offensive coordinator Pete Carmichael has been with Peyton from the very beginning of with the Saints and with quarterback Drew Brees all the way back to San Diego.
All right, I'll take Peyton light. Maybe I will be excited no matter who they hire.
Dan Campbell has been Peyton's assistant head coach, and he was with the Cowboys from 2003 through 2005 as a player. Matt Eberflus, Garrett's original staff in 2011, and now he's been having tremendous success with the Indianapolis Colts as Frank Reich's defensive coordinator. San Francisco defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, he has plenty of talent to work with and has made the most of it.
You know, and I wish I had the name of the person Kevin and Corey were interviewing today, but he did make a good point, and I'm not saying that this has to happen, but he was saying, and I wish I knew who they were talking to because I caught it middle interview, but they said, I really think Dallas should hire somebody who's been part of the Dallas Cowboys before. Because if you go outside the organization and they've never been in this organization, mm-hmm. it is so different okay. to come into the Dallas Cowboys because it's run so different from all the 31 other organizations.
You got to have some kind of knowledge to make sure you know.
There's a little bit of a learning curve on how it works with the Jones family to be the head coach here. And so he was kind of, and he was saying, look, college might not, he was saying he wouldn't hire a college, he'd hire a professional. And then he said, I would hire somebody that's been part of Dallas's staff before because of how difficult it's going to be for somebody who's yeah. never been in the Dallas Cowboys organization to come here and deal with everything that you have to deal with.
I'd like to take Josh McDaniels off that list because I think he should be blackballed as an NFL head coach.
For what he did to the Colts?
For what he did to the Colts. Like if you're going to say, hey, yes, I accept the head coach position, let's go. And yeah. then the next day be like, no, I'm changed my mind.
Denver was a dumpster fire. That happened. None of Belichick's assistants work out. Josh McDaniels is the guy on the list that I want the least to.
Yes, yeah, yes.
A lot of reasons no, to not thank want him. The college guys, Lincoln Riley, Matt Rhule, Urban Meyer. You have wild cards, Mike Shanahan. Now, these are the ones that could get really interesting because Jerry Jones and, you know, his network of guys are older dudes, so they don't look at Mike Shanahan as any sort of an age challenge. You got another wild card, Jason Witten. How about Jason Witten or Tony Romo? That would be so damn fun.
No, thank you.
Witten wants to do it. Romo doesn't. Like, saying Tony Romo, he doesn't want to coach. He wants yeah. to play golf and make $8 million to $10 million a year calling games.
Okay, and do you guys think Jim Harbaugh is realistic?
That's interesting because I don't know if it's fair to say he's underachieved at Michigan.
They're
infinitely better than they were without him.
Wouldn't Jerry talk to all the people in San Francisco and they would tell him he was miserable to work with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so why would Jerry want to bring that misery in his life?
That's a very good point, Mike. Yeah.
And by the way, somebody says, I should coach. Mike thinks he knows everything. No, the smart thing about me is I know what I don't know. I'm not Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones believes he knows everything.
Okay, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan, approaching the midway point of today's show. Tomorrow, of course, we're throwing a fan open house with you along with Balconis. And you're going to be invited all the way from 10 at the start of the KNC Masterpiece to 7 o'clock at the end of ours. And we have prizes and all kinds of fun to be had every hour.
I think there's a good point on the Autoflex Leasing fan text about this that I think is worth at least thinking about. Coordinator names who you weren't really familiar with before this year. And it's like, all right, here's the hot coordinator. And why is he the hot coordinator? Because either the offense or the defense of this team is doing really well. If that unit is stupid talented, I would probably shy away from there.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, he's responsible for this. And I'm like, okay, well, Chris Richard was responsible, quote, for the Legion of Boom. Why don't the Cowboys have Pro Bowlers in the secondary? Because it was maybe the talent and not the guy. So when you start listing off those coordinator names, like, well, look what he's done this year in fill in the blank city. I want that coordinator. If the players are really, really good, it might not be him.
Yeah, you know, that's a good lead. Well, let's bring him in and pick his brain and see if, you know, we can match that up with what we're seeing on film and fill out a picture of him being a genius, not just assume, because that's risky business right in there. Okay, speaking of coordinators, Mike Fisher brought back some audio from the Ford Center at the start today where everybody was talking. We'll start with Kellen Moore on talking about learning from last year's Rams game, which was, you know, real tough to score for a long time.
Obviously, they did a really good job just stopping the run, probably from a scheme standpoint, you know, playing some bigger guys in there early on early downs. And then, we were close. We moved the ball all right, and we just didn't make enough big plays, you know, right at the end. And kind of got stuck behind, got it turned it into a little two-score game late and couldn't quite get it back. But, it's a really good game to watch and learn from.
Can we start that quote again from the very beginning? I think that they told on themselves at the very beginning of this, and it's embarrassing this happens to a pro team.
Obviously, they did a really good job just stopping the run, probably from a scheme standpoint, you know, playing some bigger guys in there early downs.
That's
and then
good. That was what happened to the Cowboys against the Rams. Was Wade Phillips showed up and he said, all right, guys, let's stop the run. That's what they do on early downs. And
yeah,
they did. And the Cowboys refused to adjust, and Wade Phillips is sitting there with a whole book in his hand, like, when I have to go to page 2, I'm ready. And they were like, no, you can stay on page 1 the entire game.
Ooh.
Because we're going to let it work.
Well,
oh, that was awful. That was so awful.
Yeah, and then, you know, the defensive side was big, and Chris Richard knows about that, as Jared Goff juking Jeff Heath probably still haunts him. Here's Chris Richard on that topic that's become a major trouble spot for this year's Cowboys tackling.
I mean, you just have to do it again. You got to grab agile bags. You got to grab chest shields and in any way possible. You're bringing up that point, and it's valid. No, it's valid. We must be better tacklers out there, especially dealing with this team. Like, there's no doubt about it. It's like throughout the whole entire NFL, again, tackling needs to be better. You know, and again, us, absolutely. You know, we know that. We understand that. At this point in time, again, pads start coming off. So, again, you got to be creative. You got to start using a little bit more agiles, the chest shields, things like that. But fundamentally, have to stay in tune with getting people on the ground.
So you'll focus more on tackling this week?
No, we focus on tackling every week.
Okay, I know if it was just an extra emphasis because it's been a problem. It certainly was a problem against the Bears.
It's emphasis every week.
Okay. What was your thoughts, emotions when you saw the tackling this past game?
Yeah, it's not what we're accustomed to. It's not up to our level of expectation or standard. So that has clearly been explained, it's clearly been expressed, and it's been accepted. What difference does it make is what we got to go out and do about it. It's as simple as that. Like, we got an opportunity to go out there and do things correctly and do things right, and that's what we're focused on.
It's just so frustrating when it's players who had been good tacklers in the past. Like, how do you stop being good at your job?
Especially when I believe last week they had 19 missed tackles, which was not only their high for the season. I believe I saw that was an NFL high season for any team.
Wow.
So it's like when you're searching for reasons, like, because you will have guys tell you, right? We're in first place. And that's all I heard Jalen Smith say, like, we're in first place. That's where you want to be. You get to the tournament and you see what happens, right? Well, how disheartening should it be to everybody that when you're in that mindset and it's like, yeah, we're in first place, yet the team looks lifeless and week by week, you're getting worse. Like, you're going to reach most likely the point where teams do get a chance to play for it, but you're playing worse and worse as you get closer. Like, where is the, we believe, and it's evidenced by, like, holy cow, guys, we got so lucky. We're 6-6, but because of our division, we have a chance at this thing. So let's go freaking dominate. Let's go get them, guys. And then you played your worst game that you've played all year.
So the Cowboys want us to be positive about them because they're in first place. Like, they would like for us to say, look, this is a first place team. What if next year they're 10-3, it probably won't happen, but Philadelphia's 11-2. That probably won't happen either. What if we went into that locker room or started saying, you guys are crap, you're not even in first place? They'd be like, we're 10-3. We have the second best record in the NFC. Like, nope, remember, not in first place. You guys wanted us to praise you for first place and only first place. So
yeah.
I mean, they want it every which way. As long as we're their mother and can just praise them all the time, no matter what, that's what they'd love.
Well, nobody likes criticism and nobody likes to have it pointed out that you're not doing well. So if you have a mentality that it's all going to be fine, it's a way of avoiding the accountability of being called out for it, right? Great leaders cut through that denial because that's what people are in. It hurts so bad to see how much of a disappointment you are and how you're not good enough that it's very, very easy. Humans will use any excuse possible to be like, oh, no, it wasn't that bad. You know, things just didn't go our way. And if you have a head coach spoon feeding that excuse week in and week out, it's going to be easy for those players to accept that and roll with that. That's where the leadership of cutting through denial needs to happen. You said it earlier. Are there any players that are saying, if you don't play better, I'm going to kick your ass after the game? Because getting threatened to have your ass kicked cuts through the denial.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden you're going to be really, really serious about making sure you're doing your absolute best. Okay, coming up next, how many Cowboys are getting ready to play their final three regular season games with the star on their helmet on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. How many Cowboys getting set to play their final three games with the team?
Oh, no, we're doing Keeper or Old Yellerum before
the... Yeah, I guess we are. Over. We're taking a previewed look at it.
Okay.
Unless some of these guys get their crap together, they could be gone. By the way, salute to Inside the Stars, Brian Martin here for the premise here. He went through the position group and identified the free agents, gave us, things we need to talk about. So salute, Brian. We appreciate you. Segments brought to you by Exergen Corporation. It's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call the office of Frankel & Frankel at 214-333-3333 or go online to frankelfirm.com. Yeah, Amari and Dak are technically possible, but I'd say the odds of Amari Cooper not being around next year are around 2%, and the odds of Dak not being around next year are probably under 0.2%.
I'm with you. They're both going to be on the team long term.
Yeah, 0% on Dak being gone and 1 or 2% on Coop being gone.
How about Sean Lee, though? I mean, the thing with Sean is you could say, well, he's getting hurt. And last year at this time, we thought it might have been his last run, his last December. But they're so thin at linebacker, I could see them saying, well, heck, if you want to play for cheap, we'd rather have you for cheap than another guy who's old.
I could see that. I would say 50% to 60% chance he's done playing football at the end of this year. I just wonder for a guy like Sean Lee, and I know he loves it and his body is kind of deteriorating on him to play this sport, is if this year is going to be so discouraging that he's just going to look at it and go, it's just not my Super Bowl hopes, my championship hopes. They're not going to happen here. My body can't go somewhere else and contribute. I had a great career. I'm going to stay in football. He'll probably be a football lifer. You know, whether it's high school, college, pros, just the type of guy that loves. But I think that there's a good chance he retires at the end of this year.
I think that's interesting. You know, he's not playing great, but he's not horrible.
Right.
Right. I mean, maybe he's an average linebacker now. And the team's not good either. If one of those things were just good, I think the chances of him coming back. But you never know how athletes look at it when they're watching themselves on film. And are they embarrassed? Or are they motivated to see if they can do better 1 year older? Like, I can still make a play a game. I want to be in there if I can help my team or if I can enjoy that impact for just one time a night.
Well, the Cowboys might have to sell him hard because we don't want to talk about this. But there's a small percentage listening to people that Leighton Vander Esch might not ever play football again. It's small. It's very small. But that neck might not ever be right. And he might try to go out there and might be like, I can't do it. The doctors are saying I can't do it. We never thought Michael Irvin, I know he's different because he's laying on the ground, but from what we understand from Jeff and from what we're hearing from other people that are doctors on this, that Leighton Vander Esch's career is a very small. It's very small. Leighton Vander Esch's career might be over, but it's very small possibility. But if the Cowboys get into March and Leighton Vander Esch's neck is still really bugging them, they might have to go to Sean Lee and say, Sean, we need you because we don't know if Leighton's going to play ever again.
We know you were disappointed in your play last year and thinking about retirement, but you can't. You have to play, and you have to play for us.
Well, I would rather his career be done than have him be a bad football player that gets a new contract early, so I'll just put that one out there. But what are the chances that, you know, that it's a weird thing with the neck? Is it worse than just a herniated disc? Because that's what they were calling it.
I don't know. You know, all we know is that they're trying to give it time to, quote, calm down, whatever it is.
And it's kind of related to whatever it was coming out of college, too?
I don't know that. I just know that coming out of college, there were teams that said either move him down or remove him from the board because he's got something going on with his neck. And then there were denials of that, and there were but it was a story before he was drafted. And then now his neck is a story again. And everything that I see is, well, we just had to keep waiting for it to calm down. But it was supposed to be, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And now it's got to feel the most that the feeling is he won't play again this year.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel about following the stories. He won't play this year.
It's less than 5% his career is over. People are asking me, come on, Mike. And there's a 95 to 98% chance Leighton Vander Esch comes back and can play football at some point in his life again. But there's the percentage that it's Prince Fielder. And he tries and he just can't. And then he's like, look, for health purposes, I can't do this.
Yeah, things happen like this. You know, you tease TJ Ford. Making an NBA career of it, had to shut it down for a couple of seasons because he had a narrowing of the spinal column in his neck. I don't know if Michael Urban's was like that, but you know, things pop up like this, and it sucks when it does. The Cowboys need Leighton Vander Esch to not just be a starting linebacker. They need him to be awesome, really, to save the linebacking core and have the
defense.
They
need him to be what Sean Lee was when he was healthy, except be healthy for his whole career.
Elsewhere here on this list of upcoming Cowboys free agents, how about Randall Cobb and Tavon Austin? I think it'd be awesome to get Cobb to come back. You know, if you could get him on a similar type of deal.
1 year, $5 million again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if he wants that, that works. This next year will probably be the last year that you'll keep players like that around, where it's the mid-level player. But yeah, I think he's a decent one, but that's also one of those spots where you've got to be really tempted to see what sort of player can I get in, let's say, the second or third round of a draft, especially in a draft that's going to be the best wide receiver draft of all time, maybe? Can I find a guy that for less money and I'll have him locked in for 4 years? Can I find that guy? Because I think they can.
You can find quality slot guys late, but guys that can step in a very important year and do it immediately.
Oh, that's why I'm saying in the second or third round. Looking for the market inefficiency on tiny people. I'm looking for a real wide receiver, and that's not a shot fired. I'm just saying I'm not looking for a 5'8", and he can help you move the chains, and you can find him in the sixth round.
I hear what Gavin's saying, though. He's saying if we draft the next Michael Gallup, which would be awesome, in the second or third round you get another Michael Gallup. Michael Gallup wasn't very good his rookie year, but now is showing great signs his second year. And next year, if you took a guy and said you're plugged in for Cobb and you're playing every snap that Cobb played, you might not get close to the production in that first year, that rookie year of the guy.
Maybe not. I mean, there's a lot of rookie wide receivers that play really well, though, every year. I guess Gallup was kind of weird because he and Dak just couldn't really connect on the deep ball, but rookie wide receivers, there's, you have a bunch every year that play well.
So you're keeping Amari Cooper in this scenario, right, and playing him in the slot or moving everybody around? Or
I think everybody can move around, but it depends who you pick. You could be picking a guy that plays in the slot. Coop can play in the slot. Either way, we're going
to
party.
Okay, Jarwin has not made enough plays to get paid. That might be the only silver lining of having Jason Witten around this year. Both Jarwin and Witten are pending free agents at the end of this season, and I think
Jarwin's restricted, though, so he's yours as long as you want him.
Cool, and I do want him.
I do, too. He's my starting tight end.
Especially in March, I want a decision that Jarwin, and then maybe if we if a draft pick finds us in the second round who can challenge Jarwin for snaps. But I think once Witten is gone, Blake Jarwin is going to break out to be around an average type of tight end. You know,
yeah. Can you imagine if they do hire a new coach, Witten says he wants to come back, and then Jerry Jones says, hey, Witten's playing.
Witten's back, yeah. You guys want to make sure that
like that would probably be like the first thing the coach has to go through is like,
okay, but we have this guy who might be able to score touchdowns.
What do you want me to do with Witten?
Yeah.
And I want that coach to be the guy that in that room goes, that's cool, but I'm the one on the sideline on game day, so I'm going to tell whoever to go in the game. If you want to fire the head coach that you hired 2 days ago, it'll be a real weird story in your news cycle, but go ahead. I'm not playing inferior players.
Yeah, and that's why I think Jerry stays away from anybody that has a hint of stubbornness in their background or ego or whatever it is. You know, I think that wouldn't a guy that was capable of making that decision wouldn't get the second interview, right? By that point, they'd have called around to everybody in his network, and somebody would have told the truth. That, hey, this guy's going to put his foot down if you try to cowboy up on his roster.
It's been over 15 years since Jerry had a coach that would disagree with him. I'm hoping that's long enough that he's willing to do it again.
He just wants it to be his team. And Jerry will BS you sometimes and say, I'm not the real owner. I'm just watching over this thing for a time being.
That's a bunch of horse crap.
Yeah, that's such a bunch of horse crap. No, you want to win the Super Bowl and have it be all because of the decisions you made. At other times, he spells that out very, very clearly when it's convenient for him. On the offensive line, Cam Fleming and Joe Looney are pending free agents. That make you nervous at all?
No, I'd buy. If you're telling me that like when Cam Fleming played, it got kind of dicey for the Cowboys. When Joe Looney can't play with Xavier Suafilo in the lineup? He did a serviceable job when you lost Travis Frederick for the year. Serviceable. But if this coaching staff really feels like he's not a better guard than Suafilo, then I'm going to find a guy. I'm going to find a guy off the streets, a practice squad, an undrafted free agent. I'm going to find a guy. I'm not paying a...
You can't get any geek off the street.
You can sometimes. I'll fill that job.
Unfortunate because that offensive line depth was supposed to be one of the real strong suits of the team, and it did not come together. So Fleming's probably going to have to go back to the Patriots and start a Super Bowl for him.
Isaiah
Wynn gets hurt again.
In theory, next year you have Connor McGovern.
He hurt
the boob, and so he's going to miss this entire year. But in theory, you have a third-round pick who's ready to be your backup.
Hello, McGovern. Welcome back. Defensive line, Quinn, Bennett, Malik, Antoine Woods, all free agents. How many of those guys make it back? Zero?
I might be zero.
Yeah.
Most likely could be Antoine Woods.
I think Woods makes it back because he's not going to be that big of a free agent on the market.
Nothing.
And the Cowboys
nobody else wants him.
Yeah, defensive tackles.
Malik Collins has probably made enough sacks this year to get a nice offer from somebody. He gone.
Maybe. And Michael Bennett, he and Jerry worked it out to void a year of his deal. So clearly he wants to be a free agent and either that or have options on what he's going to do with life.
I would have a tough time if I'm Michael Bennett at the end of my career saying I want to come back to this.
No.
I mean, he had to start screaming at the players 3 games into his career here in the middle of a season because nobody wanted to step up and be a leader.
I want Robert Quinn back if he promises me he's going to be in the same offseason regiment. You know, whatever that required.
I know what you're inferring, and it's real messed up.
I don't know why he needed those masking agents that caused him to miss 2 games, but as long as those are part of the plan, then I'm on board with it.
I'd like him back, and you can make it work, but you're going to get to a name that I want back more, so he'll have to wait.
Byron Jones, that's the topic of today's video. I'm sure we'll get more on that from you at 6 o'clock. He and Anthony Brown are free agents. You want to thumbnail it here real quick for us?
Yeah, those are your 2 best corners. I'm a Jordan Lewis fan. I like Jordan Lewis, but
he's just a ball god.
We'll go over it. Yeah, we'll go over it a little bit later in the show at 6 o'clock. But Byron Jones and Anthony Brown are this team's 2 best corners, and the two that are playing right now, other than Byron, it's night and day when you compare what happens when they're thrown at versus Byron and then Anthony Brown, and Byron is by far the best. If you think that you can get by with those two going away and just the two that you have now and whatever you add, that defense is going to be in deep doo-doo.
All right. Not that it's going to hurt, but Jeff Heath, Deontay Thompson, and Kevon Frazier are free agents as well.
Kevon can play for like the league minimum if he wants to hang around because he's good in the community. I like him, and he plays special teams, every special team.
Co-sign. Around the NFL is coming up next in the G-Bag Nation. Here's Michael, first down.
Well, I'm interested in tonight's game because Lamar Jackson is playing. It usually wouldn't be much of a game. Let's just say if the 49ers were playing, and nothing against Jimmy Garoppolo, he's having a very good year, but I'd say, all right, the 49ers are going to win by double digits easily, and the game will be over by the end of the third quarter. But because it's Lamar Jackson, I'm going to be tuned in until the Dallas Mavericks start, and then I'll switch the channel. But Lamar Jackson isn't healthy right now. He's going to play tonight. I'm just wondering this. At what point will they pull him? I'm assuming they're 17-point favorites, by the way. I'm just going to assume the way that the Baltimore Ravens have played this year, they're blowing out teams. What's the number? What's the time in the game? If you're dealing with a quarterback who's a little bit injured, he's the key to you winning the championship this year. If you're up by 17 points, with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. I know most coaches would say that is
not time. No, not enough.
Maybe fourth quarter.
I bet that's about it. Three-score game, five minutes left in the fourth.
Okay.
I think that's just what they do in the NFL, right?
Even if you're winning 24-7 and the other team showing no sign of moving the ball, which could be the case tonight, like the Jets, would you just say, look, we can win the rest of the game on defense. Let's not take a risk anymore with Lamar in this game.
I'm
throwing it out. Like,
okay, so this is, let me ask you this.
He's not healthy. That's why it could be a scenario here.
In that kind of situation, that's special. I was going to ask you from a player's perspective, how much would Lamar be thinking stats? You know, I want to get towards incentives, or I want to start building a career profile.
You know, I don't know.
It's clear Peyton Manning was very interested in that.
Yes, yeah. And I don't know his. I mean, really, he's already hit the big stat. He's gone over 1,000 rushing yards. So I know that he probably wants to accumulate more, and tonight he will accumulate more. I'm just wondering from a coaching standpoint and a general manager standpoint, and looking at the future standpoint, like how much is enough? And you guys put it, it's probably for them. You got to be up by three scores with 5 minutes or less to go in the game. I'm just wondering, in this special situation, would they say, Lamar, you've done enough. If our defense can't hold this and RG3 can't hold this, then we don't deserve it. And I can bring you back in. It's not like baseball where I take out the starting pitcher and he can't come back in the game. I can, if it gets down to 10 points with 6 minutes to go, bring them back in.
Well, if any organization's going to do it, I bet it'd be the Ravens doing some forward-type thinking on that, managing for the long term. Be a smart thing to do if you have an injured player. But, you know, I think until mathematically you've clinched that number one overall seed, you're probably just looking at it as a normal situation. NFL teams have a habit and a track record of, if you can play, we're just going to assume you're 100%, right?
Oh, yeah. You're out there. Go get
them. We're playing you normal. Around the NFL is brought to you by WinStar World Casino and Resort. Denver Broncos coach Vic Fangio bringing up an idea of no more divisions. And I think,
he's mad at the Cowboys, isn't he?
Well, you know, or just kind of spitballing on these things. I think he's got a good point. He says you've got 16 in each conference. Everybody should play everybody once. That's 15. Then if you want a 16th game, you could play a natural rival from the other conference, Jets and Giants, Eagles, Steelers, Texans, Cowboys, etc. Play every year.
I actually love it.
Then keep it at 16 games, but you'll avoid the problem that's going to happen this year where probably an 8-8 team is going to host a 12-4 team.
Your team's not good, sir. You're not allowed to talk about this.
Would you love, I'm just throwing this out because it would go back to old school baseball. Would you love that you never played an AFC team unless you're in the Super Bowl?
I would tweak Vic's formula and have it be a rotation. So every 16 years, you're going to play a different AFC team, right? Or every year, you're going to play a different AFC team. But either way kind of works. Yeah. And I think it creates a much more fair system for determining who are the best teams in a conference and who deserves a playoff spot.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. We could get our dang draft pick. Instead, we're not going to get it. We're going to have to go to the playoffs.
How much of it comes down to money, though, and the fact that right now the Cowboys and Eagles fan bases are totally in, not only watching their games, but their division rivals' games?
I guess
they're not
his,
checking out.
True, but in his scenario, you still get that game. You just don't get the double game. You don't get, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you, what
oh, yeah,
you're saying
be
is
terrible for the Cowboys.
What I get what you're saying is like, hey, there's rivals there and you're just used to that. But
also the fan interest in you're playoff capable right now. You know, the Cowboys in the NFC East are always play, even the 8-8 years. They went into week 17 having a chance to make in the playoffs.
Because we're the crappy division most of the time?
Yeah.
Since this decade. Since the early 90s and mid-90s, we've become the crappy division where the crap team gets in the playoffs a lot of times.
I don't know what the accountants would say there in the NFL office. Like, does that start to eat away at your ratings if all these 500 teams now know we're not going to make the playoffs?
The best way to do it in that scenario is to say, no team, if we change to this, we can also change. And say no team gets a bye. There's no, you, the one and the two seed do have to play in the wild card weekend. We're having eight Ooh. Teams make the playoffs in each conference.
That's fine.
So Problem one solved. Plays eight, two plays seven. So now the Cowboys would still have an outside chance of getting the 7 or 8 seed.
We should have done this this topic at 5:10 when Jerry's for sure listening. At this point, we have to hope he got in the car a little bit early because I think that's a superior system. And I think what you mentioned right there solves the problem of, you know, teams not feeling like they have a shot at it. Okay. Yeah, around the NFL, brought to you by WinStar World Casino and Resort. Here's Jeff with third down.
Bill Barnwell ranked the best and worst potential head coach openings in 2019 in the NFL. What's the best? What's the worst? And he opens with this sentence. Of the 9 teams I found as potential candidates, one was an easy choice as the least desirable opportunity.
Bengals.
Let's start with the most depressing team in the league. At number 9. He picked 9 teams that he thinks may have a coach opening. He did not pick Cincinnati because they have a first-year coach, okay. Zach Taylor. Washington at number 9.
That's true.
That's the least attractive?
Yes. He said the biggest strength, the check's clear.
They're in the NFC East.
Yeah, they have won the division twice this decade.
Biggest weakness, ownership. And he mentions, like, I'm not criticizing Washington fans. You just deserve better after 20 disastrous years under Daniel Snyder. At number 8. The New York Giants. So it's NFC East, NFC East. The worst coaching openings, according to Bill Barnwell. Biggest strength? Market, baby.
Yeah.
New York.
Yeah, I think New York has a great leadership at the top. They've kind of lost their way with some of their football operations stuff, but that ownership group's going to figure it out again.
And he says biggest weakness is talent on the team. Number 7 is the New York Jets. Biggest strength? Promising quarterback. Biggest weakness? Lack of talent. Number 6, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Biggest strength, draft capital. Biggest weakness, missing the quarterback. Number 5, the Cleveland Browns. Biggest strength, young talent. Biggest weakness, ownership. You're getting ownership on quite a few of these. The 4th most desirable of the potential head coaching openings this offseason, according to Bill Barnwell, is the Detroit Lions. Biggest strength, he says it's quarterback, Matt Stafford. Biggest weakness, ownership. At number
losers.
3.
Losers.
At number 3.
I already know what our weakness is going to be then.
At number 3.
Owner, president, general manager.
Come on, let him say it first.
At number 3 is the Atlanta Falcons. Biggest strength? Ownership. Biggest weakness? Salary cap.
Oh, no.
At number 2, the Carolina Panthers. Biggest strength? Talent.
No quarterback.
Biggest weakness? Quarterback uncertainty. And according to Bill Barnwell, the most appealing job to head coaches that will be open this offseason, the Dallas Cowboys. Biggest strength?
Talent.
Talent. Biggest weakness?
Owner, president, general manager.
Well, he just went with ownership, sir. He just went with
many shots.
He went with one single word. But yeah, he says they've got a ton of talent.
That's disrespectful to Jerry to not put all the titles on it.
They don't have a real general manager.
Come on, Mike.
Owner is good enough. You own the thing. You don't need more.
He does.
Oh, yeah?
That's a great,
Jerry.
That's a great point. Yeah, but Bill Barnwell does say, even with all of what goes into dealing with Jerry Jones, and it is what he lists as the weakness, is that this will be the most desirable job if you're an NFL coach this offseason. I guess we'll see, right? We'll see. Did the Cowboys end up with their pick of the litter on head coaches, or do they end up going with guys that are willing to accept the circumstances that it takes to coach here?
We shall see.
I want it to be Jason Witten and then him get mad at halftime, put on the pads, and put himself in the game.
Okay. Oh, that would be awesome. All Jerry right. can come coach
And then
coach
Jerry
at that
comes
point.
Down,
yeah.
and then he is the coach for the rest of the game.
Okay. A little bonus here for you. Fourth down, Major League Baseball removed pot from the list of drugs of abuse under its Joint Drug Prevention and Treatment Program. The change that occurred as a result of negotiations with the Players Association. Baseball is going to continue to test for opioids, fentanyl, cocaine, and fake weed, synthetic THC. Major League Baseball will now treat marijuana-related conduct in the same way it treats alcohol-related conduct. So the development is increasing the public pressure today on the NFL to follow suit.
They don't care.
The NFL. Well, MLB, you know, made the players' union negotiate as well, and I don't know what the players' union gave up to get it.
What it was this, is they would just say, hey, you tested positive for marijuana. Do you want to do you need help? And if the player's like, yep, they're like, all right, do you want to keep playing during the help or do you want to sit out? I mean, that was your penalty if you tested positive. Now they're not even going to test for it. That's from what I understand, it's going to be the same with opioids. That's a lot more dangerous. They're going to say, hey, you tested positive for opioids. You have a problem. Would you like to go to rehab for it, or would you want to keep playing?
And then,
like,
what do you want to do?
I got them from
no.
your doctor. I got them right. from the team doctor.
And he says, "No, man, it's a lot of hydrocodone, and I really like them. Thanks, yeah. though." It's like, all right, well, see you later.
Like, there, you can't get suspended yeah. for it.
I've made a side
just
hustle off
like you couldn't
of
get
them.
Suspended for marijuana.
Unbelievable! I can't believe they're not going to punish these guys for doing drugs. I mean, how do you expect them to get any help if you don't make? Right.
Where okay. is the DARE program when we need
yeah,
it?
Come on.
Top stories that have been breaking this afternoon. Coming up next in the nation.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.